Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Phil Quaid. Phil's the Chief Information Security Officer of Fortinet. As CISO, Phil's responsible for Fortinet's information security, the expansion of Fortinet's federal and critical infrastructure business, and he serves as a strategic consultant to Fortinet's C-level enterprise customers. Prior to joining Fortinet, Phil spent 3 decades at the National Security Agency, where he was the director of a cyber task force and a special assistant to the NSA Director for Cyber. In this interview, Phil argues that cybersecurity needs to act like a science in order to understand its core strategies and implement the complex elements that can be layered on top of that strategy. Phil believes that doing so starts with building a foundation based on speed, integration, and connectivity. Fortinet, which was built on these elements, is focused on making sure they provide the fastest possible cybersecurity solutions out there, as well as providing the ability to connect them together. We also discuss the differences between private and public sector cybersecurity, Phil's approach to mitigating risk, the advantages of being an internal first user, and a variety of other topics. Phil Quaid, welcome to Technovation. It's wonderful to speak with you today.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Phil, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are the Chief Information Security Officer of Fortinet, a security company based in Silicon Valley. And for those who are listening who may not be so familiar with the company, I thought we'd begin with a description of the business itself. Can you take a moment and describe it for us?
You bet. So cybersecurity is an enabler of business, right? So many of the businesses that have been built in the past have been built around producing widgets and things. The economy we're in today is about data, a data economy. Well, there is no data economy without cybersecurity behind it. So not quite 20 years or so ago, our founders of Fortinet established a company that was built around a foundation of speed. Because if you're in the business of using data to run your company or run your government organization, data moves at cyber speed. So our founder built a company that's built around a foundation of cybersecurity done at speed and scale. And it's just taken off from there.
That's excellent. And, you know, there are so many aspects to cybersecurity. And it's certainly for those who are implementing solutions, oftentimes a portfolio of solutions necessary in order to ensure that their data and information is safeguarded appropriately. Where does your offering begin and end, so to say?
That's an interesting question. So Fortinet started off as a somewhat humble firewall company. And a firewall, of course, is something that's been around since the earlier days of cyberspace. A firewall basically controls access from, you know, someone who has an asset that's valuable and a person who wants access to that asset. So a firewall does that in very, very intelligent ways. But we've since built out that portfolio where you have many, many variations of those firewalls, things that work at extraordinarily and exquisite speeds and reliability, all the way down to things that work on your desktop, so a smaller scale, and even up in the cloud. We'll talk more about that in a second. So our foundation is one in which you do something called segmentation, where you create very strong and agile fortifications around your assets to make sure any of the right people get access to them. But since that time, we realized that to be successful, you need to have layers of defense. Maybe you need to do some defenses within the core of your network. That's very appropriate. But maybe you need to do some more way out on the hairy edge where users are sitting at the desktop or maybe even riding around their automobile. Furthermore, as people move more and more of the business up to the cloud, right, the place where you can agilely and quickly marshal some resources, owned by someone else, we realize that security is necessary there. So Fortinet, in addition to being built on a foundation of speed, where everything is done at as fast as possible speed, it's also one that's built on a range of solutions, things that work at the endpoint, things that work in the core, and things that work upwards in the cloud as well. If I could, that's simply describing the range. There's one more strategic thing that turns out to be really, really important to people who are buying solutions in each of those areas, endpoint, core, and cloud, and that's the integration of those solutions. When I was in the intelligence and defense community, what I often saw was adversaries coming at us with multifaceted approaches. They might come at you from point A, point B, and point C. They were doing offense as a team. And so what Fortinet provides is the ability to take all its solutions, those different categories and places I described earlier, and integrating them together so you can do team-oriented defense. So that way you can protect at the time and place of your choosing as opposed to the adversary's choosing.
Yeah, very interesting. And I know, you know, one of the challenges, Phil, is the cyber is not something that you can the cyber realm, I should say, is not something you can touch. As we think about physical security, there are, you know, norms and aspects to that that are quite literally tangible. And I know that there's an analogy there that you like in thinking about how to manage cybersecurity risk. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
Yeah, you're opening a great conversation, and we'll get to risk in just a second if we could. The what's emerging, or what's converging, that's probably the better word, is that traditional cyber domains are rapidly integrating with things that are typically physical domains. And what I mean is, for example, the factories or our critical infrastructure today, they use a class of technology called operational technology. Those are things that help ensure the safety and reliability of physical operations. But increasingly, this convergence of their systems, their operations, with traditional IT, and that convergence is creating, you know, new opportunities for efficiency, certainly, but also new opportunities for adversaries to come in and not only do data breaches, the things that we fear most in the IT world, but actually cause physical compromises to occur that could affect the safety of a human being or the reliability of a whole plant. So cyber-physical convergence represents a new area that we need to address differently. So I'll come back to that hopefully a little bit more later on. But you asked the question about risk, and this turns out to be one of those areas where the folks who've spent most of their lives in the IT world can actually learn quite a bit about the folks who've spent many of their years in the operational technology or OT world, running these critical infrastructures or industrial automation systems. In that space, the OT world, they focus a lot on identifying the bad consequences that they want to avoid. And as we all know, risk is some combination of a vulnerability, a threat, someone who's able and willing to exploit that vulnerability, and then, of course, a bad consequence that results from it. So the folks in the OT world, or critical infrastructure world, for example, they identify the bad consequences they want to avoid up front, and then they work to engineer them out of the system so they can never happen, even if there is a vulnerability or a threat. And it's a methodology that's absolutely appropriate, not only to the OT world, but to the IT space as well. In fact, it's something that we use in our C-suite at Fortinet, where we identify the top bad consequences we want to avoid, and we try and mitigate those bad things so they could never happen to begin with. And that leaves the folks who run security operations in the company focused mostly on finding and fixing vulnerabilities and addressing threats. It reduces the amount of risk that you have to manage if you can mitigate vulnerabilities, if you can mitigate consequences.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And I know that you're also very interested in the scientific aspect, the science behind cyber, and thinking about that as you think about some of the key fundamentals relative to cybersecurity. Can you talk a bit about that as well?
It is. Back when we first started talking a few minutes ago, I talked about how Fortinet was built on a foundation based on speed. And I'm looking backwards now. I'm looking to say, well, what was the internet built on when it first invented, you know, back in the 60s? It was built on two things. Its foundation, its fundamental elements were based on two things. Number one, speed. What can we do to greatly increase our ability to send information back and forth? And the second fundamental element of the internet is connectivity. How can I greatly enrich the ability to people to communicate among each other? So, Fortinet looks at those fundamental elements and says, well, if you're going to develop a cybersecurity solution, guess what? You better build a cybersecurity solution that's built on those fundamental elements of speed and connectivity. So that gets back to our strategy of making sure that we have the fastest possible cybersecurity appliances or solutions out there. We build our own chips that underpin that. And second of all, that we connect them together so that we can do cybersecurity as a team through integration and connectivity, just like the rest of the internet communicates by connecting people and systems together. So what we're doing is we're somewhat looking to say, how can we treat cybersecurity like a science? What are its fundamental elements? And what are the laws that govern those fundamental elements? Not literally the laws, but what are the formulas, the policies, the theorems that would allow you to excel in this domain? It's not unlike what the scientists did, you know, hundreds of years ago, right? The physicists invented the science of physics. Chemists did the same with chemistry, right? They realized that there are some fundamental facts they needed to discover, and they needed to figure out what are the controlling the scientific principles, so how those facts interact. Cybersecurity needs to be like that. We need to understand its fundamental element, and then we also need to understand what are the fundamental strategies we need to implement, and then what are some of the more complex things we can layer on top of them. So yeah, I agree. We need to treat cybersecurity like a science, and it starts with building on a foundation of speed and integration.
And it's a very interesting analogy that you draw, Phil. And, you know, certainly those who've been aware of, and it's hard not to be aware of these days, the many issues that enterprises and individuals are experiencing from cybersecurity mishaps of various kinds, to put it mildly, that the threat landscape is ever evolving. And, you know, the laws of physics don't really change. But the ways, the methods, unfortunately, the bad actors who are in some cases the perpetrators of the issues, many cases, in fact, are themselves quite bright and oftentimes very well funded. And I'm curious, as you think about applying a science to this, to developing sort of the rules or laws that will help kind of at least define the bread box, so to say, what are the various avenues that you need to pursue? How do you safeguard them, et cetera? How much of that evolves over time, and how much of that do you see as something that is timeless?
Yeah, I think it does. You need to be agile in your strategy and its implementation. So, you know, just 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, it was mostly about identifying viruses and controlling their outbreaks. The threat vector today is quite different. The threat vector today is, email attachments with the intention of achieving a ransomware situation. So you're right, the techniques change and the end states change. I mean, one might simply be to disrupt, I don't mean to say simply, whereas the other one might be to commoditize, think ransomware. Where more and more we're headed, of course, and all is not dark, but this particular thing is particularly dark, is the fact that most of the adversaries also seek to do not just digital damage, but physical damage. And this gets back to the critical infrastructure question. What do we need to do to make sure that our adversaries can't use cyber effects to cause physical effects to our critical infrastructures that could jeopardize the safety and reliability of the things that are really important to our economy? So I think that we'll continue to have the threat vectors that target us from a denial of service perspective. We'll have threat vectors that target us from a holding data hostage perspective. Breaches, are, of course, an enduring problem. But increasingly, I think the future is one in which we need to better protect our physical assets that are connected into cyberspace.
And it's interesting, Phil, you know, a lot of organizations cordon off physical versus data or cybersecurity. And consider them really two different disciplines. And if I'm hearing you correctly across multiple answers now, you believe that those really need to converge. And I just wanted to validate, is your belief also that they ought to be, you know, part of the same department, that they ought to have sort of a, you know, single head who's overseeing the two, so to make sure that the team that is responsible for one is completely cognizant of what's happening in the other, and that there's sharing of information across, perhaps in a way that when they are siloed, that might not be as easily done?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head that the solution is minimally integration in your planning and strategy of how you implement cybersecurity, operational security. So think, you know, your control of your HVAC system and your pumps and pipes and things like that. And then, of course, physical security, your doors and key passes. So minimally, those functions need to be well planned and integrated inside an organization. Now, functionally, I mean, excuse me, management-wise, you can decide whether you want to have that over one person, under one person or three. I'd be more inclined to make sure you have one person orchestrating the integration across all three. I'm less worried that it's one person in control, so long as you have a horizontal integrator that's making sure that all your planning is done well. You know, back in my old business in the intelligence and defense community, I was aware of operations where we would take advantage of let me say it more generically, gaps between those initiatives were taken advantage of. And what I mean is that maybe you couldn't get into a system through a cyber vulnerability, but maybe you could use another a vulnerability in the physical domain and use that physical insertion point to put in a cyber tool. So those were blended attacks that we tried to detect and fend off. So the short answer is that, yep, we need to make sure that we're addressing security holistically across physical security, operational security, and IT security. And it's really important to integrate those functions within an organization.
Yeah. You know, it also strikes me, Phil, you are the chief information security officer of a company that serves chief information security officers, as that's often the title of the people who are buying services and products from Fortinet. And I wonder what opportunities that provides you to not only be an advocate on behalf of your company, as is only natural as an executive of a company like yours, but also as a peer to that very group, somebody who could be a sounding board and perhaps offer advice above and beyond specifically what it is that your organization is selling.
I think you're onto something there. The Fortinet has a stellar reputation, as I mentioned before. It's broad, it's integrated, it's automated, and that itself gets me in really meaningful conversations with customers and potential customers about what they need to do to help secure their systems, because Fortinet has a lot to offer there. But the fact that I'm also the CISO of Fortinet, not simply an executive representative of it, that seems to give me perhaps a little bit more connection with the people I'm talking with, because CISOs have difficult jobs, and many of us believe that CISOs need to support each other across organizational lines. So you can have a CISO to CISO connection with someone in another company, another organization, and it tends to be a little bit more meaningful, because each of us know that we're helping to protect our company and make it successful, and that's a very complex thing. So my first role is, my first credential is the fact that I work for Fortinet, and that says a lot. My second credential is that I'm a CISO, and that has specific meaning to the other CISOs I talk to. And then there's a somewhat intangible dimension as well, and it's the fact that before coming to Fortinet, I spent a good 30 years in the U.S. intelligence and defense community, looking at intelligence operations and offensive operations and protecting our government's classified information systems. And lots of people they appreciate the fact that that background helps add perspective and credibility to what I'm doing in the commercial sector today. Because there's some things that when you're in the private sector, you'll never know, right? You're never tooled to conduct foreign intelligence on a nation state adversary. That's just not what companies spend their money on. So what I've found is that folks with that deep background in government service in those areas, they tend to be listened to quite closely by those in the private sector. So that's a third element of what I can sometimes do to add value to a client engagement.
Yeah, and you do have that unusual background. You spent 34 years at the National Security Agency, the NSA, where you were most recently, before joining Fortinet a little more than 2 years ago, the director of Cyber Task Force and special assistant to the NSA Director for Cyber. And you've already begun to allude to that, the different sorts of perspectives that you bring to this role and bring to your conversations with your peers as CISOs at other organizations. And I wonder if you can maybe delve a little bit more deeply into that topic as to the advantages of having had that government experience and that broad purview that it has brought, certainly a different one as well, that you now bring to your experience at Fortinet in the private sector.
When serving those agencies and departments in the public sector, I had firsthand insight into how to do things at very large speed, at very high speed and very large scale. And number one, and then number two, I had a pretty good feel of what our foreign adversaries were seeking to do to the friendlies across the world, the friendly governments across the world. So what I'm trying to say is I understood what was technically and operationally capable to do at speed and scale. And I also understood what the bad guys were seeking to do to the good guys. And that's a perspective that's very interesting to bring into the private sector. So the private sector is all about achieving good customer experiences and making profits for our stakeholders and providing a good environment for our workforce. There are other reasons to work in the private sector, but those are three of the good ones. And what I mean is that a commercial organization isn't tooled to dive deeply into, like I said before, foreign adversaries. So someone who has experience on both the private sector side and the public sector side, to me, is bringing sort of the best of both worlds, right? So here at Fortinet, you know, I'm learning very quickly what it takes to build, you know, a profitable, forward-leaning company. And you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to help do that. But what I'm bringing from my old job is a deeper perspective that you never get in the private sector. I think there's benefits of each. You know, too often we probably overuse this term, public-private partnerships. But this is one of those areas where I think that, you know, rich dialogue between government folks and private sector folks about what each are seeing in the cyberspace domain is really, really helpful because each of them have a unique perspective.
Very interesting. I also wanted to ask you about, I mentioned earlier, of course, that you are the peer of a lot of the customers of your company's products and services. I imagine you're also a big user of them as well, which makes you a better and more capable peer, at least in describing what it is that you do and offering advice and being an advocate for your company. I wonder if you can take that similar question now, though, internally focused, and the way in which you use Fortinet's own offering, as well as maybe providing guidance on the product as you see fit, as in fact a relevant peer to those to whom the organization does and hopes to continue to serve.
Yeah, I wouldn't be very credible as the Fortinet CISO if I wasn't able to correctly say that I use Fortinet's products inside Fortinet,
and right.
And that of course is the case. We're an architecture that's built strongly around agile, strong. Segmentation. We use, you know, the best of breed for authentication and access control, etc. You know, I don't intend to, you know, brag about or give lots of details on that. But my point being is, yes, I'm user number one of Fortinet products and services, and it serves the company well. It gives you a lot of insight into their strengths and weaknesses, and also allows me to talk credibly about how Fortinet products can be complemented by our many, many partners. So Fortinet is very much an ecosystem type company. And what I mean is that we have lots of products and services that we build ourselves, and they're very well connected and automated. But we also work quite heavily with a number of commercial partners to integrate those, to integrate their capabilities across something we call the Fortinet Security Fabric. So we have many, many dozens of fabric-ready partners. And that creates an ecosystem of Fortinet products and non-Fortinet products, and they together can provide really good, you know, customer experience to the user. So inside Fortinet, yep, I'm Fortinet heavy, but I also use a variety of other products that I can integrate into the well-connected Fortinet security fabric, and, you know, really highly leverage those other non-Fortinet products as well. And then I can talk about those things when I'm out there advising customers.
Makes sense. I want to conclude with your thoughts on technology trends. I know from an earlier conversation, you've talked about what you refer to as decision-augmented artificial intelligence. And I can only imagine as the threat landscape and the threats, generally speaking, are becoming more complex, that we need, to a greater extent, all kinds of different technology to aid the human capability to decipher where issues are arising and optimally before they do. Can you talk a bit about your own perspectives and what particularly excites you, whether it's artificial intelligence or other areas that you care to call out?
Yeah, this is fun stuff. The general theme is that we need to get to the place where machines are better serving man as opposed to man serving machine. So the situation of late, and when I mean of late, I mean is the past 15 years, is as big data has emerged, is that data has overwhelmed us, us people, and the machines that run it. And so we spend too much of our time, too much of our hours and our employees' time. There's not enough smart people in the workforce to do this type of work, managing machines. And we need to get away from that. And that's what the potential for machine learning, AI, and intent-based security will allow us to do. So let's break those, let's talk about each of them in turn. So you might know that I described earlier how Fortinet has this wide range of products well connected, but you might know also that we have this very large back-end organization that does full-time threat research and pushes insights out across the Fortinet security fabric, across all those things, whether they're in the cloud, the core, or way out in the endpoint. They're real-time threat updates. Well, that used to be a relatively manual process where people did research on threats, turned them into indicators or signatures, and then they were pushed out of the security fabric. For at least 5 years now, we've been using machine learning to do that on a massive scale that can never be done by people. So we're looking at billions of pieces of malware and things that might be malware using machine learning, and then characterizing those into signatures or indicators of compromise and automatically pushing them out. So we're highly leveraging machines to do the work that's better suited for machines to do rather than sucking away the precious hours of cybersecurity specialists. That's machine learning. Let's talk for a second about AI, right? Something that's a little bit too much of a buzzword these days. The good news is that many of us, like especially at Fortinet, we're putting in place the pieces that will lead to artificial intelligence. That is a foundation built on speed, a large back-end processing capability, which is capable of getting context from large amounts of information. That's a second major context, is another part of AI. And then lastly, the ability to do something with it out at the edge where you could tailor it to the last mile. So think of an Amazon or Google appliance sitting on your kitchen countertop. If those little devices aren't that smart, what they're relying on is a very large smart back-end someplace out there. And it's pushing some pre-computed wisdom out to the edge. So that's the AI-based architecture. And I think Fortinet is well prepared to implement that AI-based architecture with a back-end, a speedy communication architecture, and then some speed at the edge. So AI is no longer simply the wish list of the computer scientists of 1985. It's just around the corner. There's something called intent-based security that's here today. And intent-based security is getting back to what I talked about, having machines serve man rather than the opposite. Intent-based security allows you to say, I want to make sure, for example, that dishwashers never talk to TV sets. I'm using the IoT analogy where your dishwasher is an IoT appliance and so is your TV set. You can create rules that people understand, and then you have your computers take those high-level expressed rules and implement the human's intent. That's pretty cool stuff because it greatly reduces the complexity for the managing of these systems. There's going to be millions, if not billions, of IoT appliances out there, but it also makes you more precise in your policy implementation. So I call that's an example of intent-based security as applied to IoT. But the concept and technologies being implemented in Fortinet today allows you to do that. It allows you to say, it's my intent to make sure that my wired systems are only allowed access to my finance system, or my wireless systems can or can't access something else. So describe the intent and let your technology implement your intent. And lastly, you asked about an idea that I'm calling AI augmented, artificial intelligence augmented decision making. So an executive today, or maybe a cybersecurity operator today, makes decision based on some combination of data, experience, and instinct. And sometimes it takes 15 seconds to make a decision. Sometimes it takes longer than that. So AI augmented decision making would recognize that you typically look for information on data point A, data point B, data point C, and automatically pushes that in front of you to make sure you're considering your regular data points. And they even suggest a solution for your consideration. So what I'm trying to say is that AI today is mostly thought of as something that's simply machines interacting with data or perhaps other machines. But AI, the future, will increasingly be interacting with people to enable people's decision-making, the things that people do really, really well, and then leverage what computers do really, really well, which is, of course, doing things quickly and putting information into context.
That's a great overview. I appreciate that, Phil. Well, Phil Quade, thank you so much for joining me on Technovation today, sharing your perspectives as a leading CISO at a leading cybersecurity company, a bit about your broader background and some of your thoughts about the future as well. It's been a great conversation.
My pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Zach Hicks, the Chief Digital Officer of Toyota Motors North America and the Chief Executive Officer of Toyota Connected.